good morning. This is the third week of our public hearings around the white paper on climate change. As I've explained previously, members belong to different committees, and so some of them will be here, some of them off, some of them all the time. The only person you have the full guarantee to have here all the time is me, so nothing can be hidden away or anything. I'll know everything. This week we are starting with our public hearings with our problem children, industry and business, the ones that are creating all the problems. The polluters. Now, I'm very happy this time that they didn't hide behind PUSA and so on, submissions. They came themselves. I prefer it like that. It's the only way to get things done is to engage, to let us hear your point of view. But I know this time the white paper is perfect, so you're going to just agree and just highlight a few little things that we have to note. So today's going to be a very easy day for us. Shouldn't be any problems. The process has been explained to you on your invitation. Each submission takes more or less 45 minutes, of which 10 to 15 minutes, depending on how good your input is given to you to give an input. The rest of the time is for questions and answers. In your input, please just concentrate on the main points. Don't thank me, don't welcome, don't greet my mother, my ancestors. It's not necessary. You can just go straight to the points you want to make. And as I said, if your input's good, I give you 15 minutes. If it's not, I stop you after 10, okay? So you'll quickly know whether I think your input's worth something. And then the committee will ask questions. You can take it that the submissions have been read. Cecil is first today. Although it indicates that their submission is 41, it's actually 33 on my submissions. So submission 33, and then they have a slide presentation today. Thereafter we have the Industry Task Team on Climate Change, then Chamber of Mines, Federation for Sustainable Environment, then the bad people, ESCOM, and then the interesting fellows, Association of Cementitious Material Product Producers. In short, that just means cement. Okay, I think we've got the drill. Cecil, you've been here many times before. Welcome. I appreciate, is it Miss, I saw Miss, huh? I saw it, what is it? Miss F. Hussein. And then you've got a team with you. Once again, welcome. Thank you for your effort. You have 10, maybe 15 minutes. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Norbert Behrens, the General Manager of Strategy in Sasol, and I'll be assisted in giving this presentation by Faye Hussein, who heads up our Public Policy and Regulatory Affairs Unit. We'll get straight to the point in connection with our feedback or recommendations as to the implementation of the White Paper. However, we do believe it is relevant to make the point and bring in a few points of context about South Africa. So as you can see, we've got an outline for our presentation over there, briefly speaking, giving some context, followed up some specific points about the climate change paper, and then finishing off with what we see as quite a practical point in implementation with regards to the IRP2. I think we're all aware of South Africa's position in the Greenhouse Gas Emissions Act internationally. What will become apparent as far as the implementation of this paper goes and the specifics of it is that where we are is quite relevant, and that 60% of the emissions globally are produced more or less by the top five countries, of which probably up to Canada, if we look at that list, only Germany is really seriously pursuing climate change policies which lead to real emission reductions. South Africa is 1.1% of global emissions. That doesn't mean we shouldn't take climate change serious, but we do need to understand what our contribution to the global emissions profile is. We as Sasol are second biggest emitter in South Africa, and we understand that in this regard we've got a key role to
play. Just explain this to me. I mean, there's no dispute that we're the 12th biggest emitter. If you count these here, we're not the 12th biggest.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
What's your source of this information?
Mr. Chairman, the source here is the IEA, and we have seen other categories where South Africa comes in slightly different or somewhat different. This is the source that we've used for this presentation.
Is there any dispute about this source? Because this source makes us 18th.
Correct.
Whereas the one that we work on is 12th. Sorry, just explain the difference. Just put your machine on.
Chair, the difference is that the statistics you're referring to are correct. It's in intensity terms. In other words, emissions per capita or GDP. This is in absolute terms, Chair.
Oh, I see. This is the overall how much we do. If you do it per capita, we're 12, you say?
Correct, Chair.
Okay. All right, now go ahead. Just so that I can understand what's the difference.
Thank you. As we show on the next slide, where we would like to point out where South Africa sits in comparison to a number of countries which have applied a carbon tax and are specifically noted in the Treasury's paper earlier this year. The point here is the extent to which South Africa relies on coal. I'm sure this point has been made in many instances, but coal, of course, is quite a heavy CO2 emitter compared to other lower carbon sources. South Africa doesn't have easy access to other low carbon feedstocks like natural gas and crude oil. On the next slide, we will compare ourselves with commodity producing countries, which are more or less our peers, often referred to as Australia, Canada, Russia, China. All of these countries have got low carbon natural gas, either in the country or, like China, a recent pipeline coming across from Siberia. This presents these countries with cost-effective alternatives to reduce emissions. As it stands currently in South Africa, apart from the gas that is exploited by Sasol gas out of Mozambique, South Africa doesn't have any significant natural gas resources. We'll move through the next few slides in the interest of time and come to our specific comments on the paper itself. These we would like to address, as we point out there in the points, first of all talking about the peak plateau and decline, the Copenhagen commitment, the interplay between the carbon budget and the carbon tax, the competing policy drivers, the time frame, and then IRP2 implementation given the current PPD profile. We would like to note that the white paper as published, particularly in the context of the profile, was significantly different to the green paper and the draft paper, in which no specific reference was made to an emission trajectory as presented in the white paper. We believe that this, although one point, centrally changes a number of points in the paper as it's written currently. On the trajectory, we would like to note the following. The trajectory brings forward lower and upper limits for the country to target, we believe, what it should be, an aspirational target for the total emissions profile. However, the paper, as it's presented currently, quite specifically mentions the numbers and brings the implementation, in practical terms, quite into a different domain. Also, before a trajectory like this could be stated, we believe would require detailed analysis of what the country's emissions currently are. We believe that as it stands right now, once the two coal-fired power stations of Eskom come online, we would already be at the peak of the numbers as published. So we believe an accurate national greenhouse gas inventory is required before one could come to these numbers. And that the range...
You want to tell me that we've been busy with this till 2005, you're now telling me we must now first have a review to see what these numbers are.
Mr. Chairman.
And may I just add, I'm very stunned by your attitude. Because it was business, that lady that came here from business, what was her name? Who spoke on behalf of business. Who came and told us that the biggest problem with the green paper is there are no targets in it. She said, we as business, we cannot accept this. How much we come here and how much we haven't got targets, and now we put targets, and now you tell us, no, but the targets, we can't use that. I'm just stunned by this attitude, particularly from Cecil, who shelled this government.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just in that regard make the point quite clear that for us the aspect to consider here is the fact that the emissions profile has been specified in in specific emission numbers.
That's what business asked us to do.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding was different in that regard.
How can it be different? The lady came here, whatever her name was, and said, we cannot deal with this issue because if you do not give us targets as government, there will not be any way that we can meet it. So now we put targets in government, and government doesn't just do it as a target. It actually does it as a trajectory, which gives us some scope. Now you tell us, well this wasn't our understanding.
Mr. Chairman, maybe if I may interject certainly when Booster presented that earlier this year, it was on the notion that the greenhouse gas inventory was being updated, which is what's been happening, and that's an ongoing process, which is also subject to review. Where we are at the moment is that the white paper is published, has kind of, I suppose, predetermined what the outcome of that ongoing review is without really building in the mechanism for an ongoing review. So just as to the earlier question as to
but that's completely wrong. Every policy is set down as a policy and then gets reviewed continuously. Every year, I mean, if we find tomorrow or next year that this is not going to happen or we need to do something else, then we change the policy, we adapt the policy, we do whatever we do. So there's a natural review process. That is why Parliament is here. There's now a white paper. This committee will from now every year, once or twice a year, call in all the role players, particularly government, to come and say, how far are we with this implementation? That will be the review that takes place all the time. Government itself will have an intergovernmental structure that will keep on reviewing what it does. It will set the budgets, the carbon budgets. So, I mean, I don't understand what it is about a review we have to do. I mean, there is automatically, government is all about that. It's about, but there has to be some certainty up front. And that's why you have a policy. And then from there on, I mean, that policy is not cast in stone in the sense that you can never change it. Of course it can be changed. I mean, I've been in government now since we've been in democracy, and there are many policies that have changed in government. They're not the same as when we started. For the obvious reason, once you start doing things, other things happen, other circumstances take place, things that we didn't think of then suddenly kick in, and you must provide for that. So, I mean, you know, this trajectory is absolutely based on the commitments we've made internationally. I'll show you just now when I ask you some questions. I'll put it up there for you so you can see what it is. In fact, in the next 9 years, we're only allowed to grow with 30 tons. That's what that trajectory means, which we have committed ourselves to internationally. The mere fact that business keeps on wanting to change the goalposts, and this is not good enough, and we have to have a review, and we don't have figures, you know, that creates the problems. So the quicker we start, and the quicker business starts adapting, and particularly structures like Sasol and Eskom, which are government institutions, in the broad sense of the word, the shareholders, the better we'll start doing with this. But you should be the last people that keep on coming to want to change the goalposts. What you can come and do, yeah, and I would welcome, is to come and tell us where the problems are. Not questioning whether this is the government policy now. That's what the policy is. It's a white paper. It's been adopted by government.
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to respond to that. We understand that as such. The difference leading up to prior to the paper and with reference to target numbers is that they would be aspirational targets to strive for. Our concern here.
So the president in Copenhagen said, I'm here now giving an aspirational target to the world. Is that what you thought the president did when he committed ourselves to the targets internationally? You honestly think that Cecil,
intelligent human beings thought that we're giving aspirational figures.
Mr. Chairman, he did make the commitment subject to some conditionalities.
Sir?
Which are subject to, for instance, financing and other conditionalities that come with that undertaking. And the extent to which the targets will be pursued or met are subject to the extent to which they are actually forthcoming.
That's the G77 position. So you're telling us we must now sit back as a country and not do anything?
Mr. Chairman, that's not our attitude or our suggestion at all. The point that we raise here is if we could maybe just get to some of the specifics in terms of putting out the profile in specific numbers has a practical implication as far as the execution of these carbon budget goes. If it's from the paper, we can only read what's published. And as it stands right now, it looks like we'll have a policy in which carbon budgets are going to be set with absolute limits per sector.
Absolutely. There'll be a budget that is looked at, there's sector budget, there'll be sector targets to be met.
How this will be implemented together with the carbon tax, we believe at this point of policy implementation should have been clearer, and there are certain problematic aspects which we think...
Tell us the problematic aspect. It's now very clear. It's the policy of government. We have to implement, particularly someone like Cecil, where government is a shareholder. What it is that government will probably, not probably, but will be engaging with you as they go along. Once those structures are set up to deal with the carbon budget, the sector, but that's the only way the world is going to go. If we do not start setting these targets, we will never get there. And what South Africa has done is, in an exemplary manner, has set those targets. And we now must meet them. Obviously, there are going to be glitches on the way. We may not meet them every year. We may not do that. But, I mean, the issue is it's there, and we must go for it. Those people that don't must get name and shame. I hope Cecil's not one of them.
I think maybe, Mr. Chair, if, just to the point, a part of our proposal to this committee is to say that in looking at the white paper and its implementation, to take into account that the goals that are set out in it, the ambitions, are subject to finance, technology transfer.
That's a broad condition. It's not a specific condition.
We're not going to stop
and we're not going to not do it because we don't have the money and technology. If we have to wait for that, we'll have to wait for the negotiations to some stage create a fund. There's no fund yet. It's never been created. So now you want us to sit back and do nothing because we're going to wait for funds and we're going to wait for technology. Forget it. It's not going to happen. That is a conditionality clearly, and us trying to meet and move with that. But we cannot leave it there. This government has now passed a policy, and in the document it says it is conditional on those things happening, or that should be part of the processes. But that's not going to stop us from not doing it. Nowhere in this document does it say government is not going to do anything because it hasn't got the technology, it hasn't got the money. Why do you think we're giving budgets to different departments? Why do you think that the paper that came out from the Department of Economic Development is telling you how we're going to deal with the part of the green economy? Not because we're going to wait for funding. It's because it's part of government policy and who is funding it. The carbon tax will be part of that funding. Those are the monies that will start coming in. And so I think you're living in a complete dream world if business thinks that this is not going to happen just because we don't get technology and funding to the extent. What the lack of technology and funding will do is it will slow down the process. That's what it will do. Simple. Obviously, the more money you've got, the more technology you've got to deal with this, and the faster things are going to go, and the more chance we're going to. So obviously, we as a government will do everything to get that money and that technology to speed up the process, but it's not the process, as you are suggesting in your submission. So I think those things you can skip. Forget it. It's not worth mentioning to us, because government has got a policy now. Those points you could have made under the green paper, not the white paper. Okay. Let's hear what your real problems are.
Mr. Chairman, in the implementation of the carbon tax and the carbon budget policy, I need to point out that there is alignment required as far as the two goes. The paper does point to the aspect of the carbon tax, but we believe, again, if this is a white paper, the extent to which those two policies are going to have to be coordinated in order to ensure that the ultimate objective is actively, effectively achieved is required. They go into exactly the same space as far as policy implementation goes. As it stands currently, that's not, we believe, at the point where it should be as far as the implementation goes. We can only respond to date in terms of the carbon paper as it was published earlier this year.
Now, they're not finalized yet. Treasury came appeared in front of us. The principle has been agreed to, but it's not been finalized. There'll be further engagement with you guys to see how we phase that in and how we do it. They will come back to us to report on the matter. So I think the point you make is very valid.
Further on, as far as the timeline of implementation goes, and maybe more specifically also here, how will these carbon budgets actually be implemented? In terms of setting carbon emissions per sector, we would anticipate that it won't be that every sector is going to be set to the same emission trajectory, as every sector has a different contribution or priority as far as national policy goes.
Well, that's what that means. That's what a carbon budget means. You go and sit down with the transport sector, you look at the transport sector, how much does it emit, what chances are there for quick change, and then you set the budget, the target for that sector, transport. Then for the energy sector. You may have a different response to the cement sector. That is why the paper makes provision for offsets. If your sector cannot, in the way it works and structured, cannot actually have a carbon budget because it just would be completely, then that sector would be able to be given offsets by government to be able to achieve the same goal. That's why there's the whole offset policies in the document. So your point you're making is fully taken into consideration, that you can't treat every sector the same. That is why there will be a structure, the intergovernmental, whatever it's called, that will every year look at the budget, the carbon budget, will look at what sectors have to do, see if it's being implemented, seeing if it's being met. That would be have to exactly what it's doing. That's what I understand the paper to say. In fact, that's what the department came and explained to committee.
Mr. Chairman, correct, but the point that we would just like to make, given the complexity of going through, first of all, establishing presumably principles along which lines sectors will be set, and ultimately this will probably have to wind down to company-specific undertakings, as industry committees are probably not going to be able to take on the commitments.
To the big ones. They won't probably be for small. They won't be for a small factory at Target, but they'll definitely be for your big Cecil, Eskom, they'll definitely be targets for some of your plants. But those are all just things that you're saying which are obvious. And that's going to just have to happen when the intergovernmental structure, and remember, each department is going to be on that intergovernmental structure. So the expertise from your sector, from transport, from whatever, will be on that structure looking at it. And it will, of course, be a political decision there. The kind of accuracy you're asking for will never happen. It doesn't happen anywhere in the world in any government.
Our point, maybe just say it's time, but that's, in other words, the 2 years would be sufficient to come to a conclusion on that process.
I hope it's much quicker than 2 years, my friend. If they come here and tell me it's taking 2 years, I'm going to kick some butts myself if I'm still in this chair. So I hope you're not hoping for 2 years.
We can then move on. Just a practical further aspect for implementation that we believe is relevant here is how the IRP2 will be brought into the carbon budget aspect. The IRP2 as it stands currently, given the emissions trajectory as we show there against the business as usual line, would imply that the proportion of carbon emission allocated to electricity generation grows, which would in turn imply that the emissions allocated to industry becomes proportionately smaller. The carbon budget process will further take this IRP2 trajectory into implementation, and we believe from a non-electricity industry perspective, this is a matter that needs to be addressed rather sooner than later, as it does create uncertainty as far as ongoing operation is concerned. This point is specifically further emphasized given that the carbon emission numbers have now been specified. In conclusion, we just like
to explain that you're saying that the trajectory on which our energy industry is, what are you saying about that?
So on the top graph, we indicate the percentage of electricity's carbon emissions as part of the total country's emissions in 2020 and 2025 as part of the business as usual trajectory, as noted in the LTMS study. If we then pursue the carbon trajectory as per our Copenhagen undertaking, that's the bottom line. However, within the IRP2 projection, the carbon emissions are set. Proportionately, if we then look how much carbon emission remains for the remainder of industry, or all emitters other than the power sector, that becomes proportionately smaller. This would imply that industry, it's another way of putting it, needs to cut back further, substantially further than...
Okay,
than
I understand your point. So you're saying the way the trajectory is, it's actually favoring the people that and gives a smaller portion continuously to the other sectors and favors the one that generates the power, the electricity.
Correct.
Okay, now that's exactly the kind of thing that I imagine will happen when these things start happening. As you set the budget, you start seeing that what is doable, what's not doable. So I think your point is well looked at. We'll have to keep on assessing this.
Then in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, the paper is a broad paper. It addresses mitigation and adaptation, and we also believe that adaptation generally is something that needs to get a greater importance and emphasis as we move on. Also, that industry has a part to play in it. As we conclude, and from our presentation, that the PPD, having it published now in fixed numbers, creates practical implication concerns as far as the implementation of this policy goes. We believe that South Africa has a significant mountain to climb in terms of reducing carbon emissions. And back to the points we made at the beginning of the hour, of the presentation, in the absence of having lower carbon feedstocks, South Africa has got starts with a disadvantage compared to against its peers, and that the economic consequence and particularly the socio-economic consequences need to be fully understood before embarking on this policy. In closing, Mr. Chairman, I would just like to say that we as SASL do subscribe to and support South Africa moving to a lower carbon economy. We would like to see this in a way which takes a balanced account of all the stakeholders of the country and particularly the socio-economic consequences. We at the forefront of the emissions reduction do understand what that will imply for jobs, and that South Africa has a flywheel in the economy which is centered around the mining and industry energy sector, and that its competitiveness compared to other countries needs to be taken into account as climate change policy is implemented. Thank you.
And if I were you guys, I'd be like China. I was you and Eskom, and I was sitting on that board, I would think like the Chinese. You obviously do, and you hold on to what you've got, but you then become the expert in renewable energy. You become the greatest exporter of that technology. That's what I do with you guys. I will become the monopolies you are now, become a new monopoly. I'll take over renewable energy if I were you guys, instead of worrying about what's going to happen in the future. What you're going to have in the future is you need to position yourself. But I think there's some good points made. I think they're valid in terms of where we still have to. But the issue we have to remember, firstly, this is a policy. The wording you use, keep on, if we implement, you can just forget that. It will be implemented. The issue is we have to find the right balances at various times. And that may not always, we may not always right, but I think with everyone's input, we'll probably get close to where the right balance is at any given time. But the fact of the matter is we're going to have to move. Not just for the... See, the issue here is not just climate change. Climate change is one big issue. The issue is sustainability and the right development path of this country. If you want to become a successful nation, and I would urge you, if you haven't heard, people like Mark Swilling, Professor Mark Swilling, and how he explains all the things we want to do without ever mentioning climate change. He does it only on the basis of sustainability of our natural resources. That's the issue. To what extent is our natural resources sustainable in the future, and how do we embrace new technologies to become a winning nation and a leading nation? That's the issue, really. At the end of the day, even if it wasn't climate change that was involved here, that we're specifically dealing with this, we would have to be doing all the same decisions we're making now. We'll have to do. The only thing, we won't do it under this umbrella of climate change. We'll do it under the umbrella of sustainability, of becoming a developmental state. And that's why I'm saying, for you companies that are in such a prime position, I would grab the thing by the horns and I will run with this thing, man. I will become the bigger than I am now, 10 times bigger than I am now. But I'm not the director on that board. Maybe I should leave Parliament. They get good salaries, I hear. Big salaries, huh? In the millions. In the millions, yeah. No, Eskom, I know. Big salaries, Eskom. All right. Members, questions? Mr. Morgan? Ms. Ndude?
Thanks, Chairperson. And thank you to Sasol for the presentation. I'd like to go into a little bit more detail about your own response and the risks to Sasol, which have only been said in a broad sense. I'd really like to tease those out now. You mentioned in your concluding remarks impediment to economic growth in South Africa. I'd like you to take into account what you see in the white paper and how you interpret it. And you can certainly include reference to the carbon tax. What the response strategy as it stands now, and I accept lots of detail, would have to be added. What it actually means to Sasol, quite frankly. I mean, what would happen to Sasol's business and investment, say, over a 10 to 20 year time horizon? That's my first question. So, does Sasol fundamentally change? I mean, does the policy just push you in another direction, which could be a good thing, quite frankly? Or does it actually shut you down entirely? Secondly, I think just for the record, if you could give us an indication of your own direct employment, as well as an organisation, in answering that particular question. The next point is, I'd like you to expand more broadly on the carbon tax. We had, as the chairperson said, a presentation on it earlier. I'm interested in your views on the pricing of carbon in general, which I think most people would agree has to be done somehow. Are your views on the carbon tax outright opposition to it and in any form? Or is it a case of not now or not in the near future? And how alternatively would you suggest that carbon is in fact priced in South Africa? And I accept that there are some effective carbon taxes already in some sort of another, which give us some basic indications of carbon pricing. Then the next question I want to know is just some comments, and I'm not asking for your trade secrets. If you could get to share with the committee some of your current investments beyond our shores, basically, and the nature of those investments and where they are, that would be certainly very useful. The last point I would really like to ask is on the trajectory which we have discussed. Now, I understand in your conclusions that you said that it could create impediments to economic growth in South Africa. I'm interested to know whether you think, in your view, the trajectory is achievable at all. I mean, granted, the peak plateau decline. I mean, granted, you can achieve it, and I think you would argue, well, you know, our emissions will reduce, but we'll lose jobs along the way. I want to know whether you think it's achievable, actually, under any circumstances, in the time frames basically provided. In other words, I'm saying, if say government throws every possible policy carrot and stick against you, whether you actually think it is possible at all. And then the last point linked to that, I'm interested in, and I don't see why this should be secret, I'm interested in what interactions government has actually had with Sasol during the drafting of the green paper and the white paper. Presumably you have said what you can conceivably do. I'm sure government would always say, well, let's make Sasol do even more. But what has actually been the nature of the consultation between you and the state? One more question. You made some comments about the greenhouse gas inventory, and you basically implied you were somewhat caught off guard because the next thing, the white paper, was published, and there was a particular trajectory, and you said, well, we would have thought that this would only follow the greenhouse gas inventory. I'm less interested in the Sasol, I'm interested in your business perspective. Where do you think the gaps are in South Africa with regards to the greenhouse gas inventory at the moment? And could you give us your expert's opinion on, as it stands now, and I granted it, I mean, I understand it's a bit out of date now, is how accurate do you think it is? And how long would it take to actually get the greenhouse gas inventory up to a point where it is an accurate informer of policy making in South Africa? Thank you.
President Dudek.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to Sasol. You know, listening to the presentation by Sasol Chair, it's clear that there is because here we are serving two different interests. Government have got particular interests in that, business also got a different particular interest. And I think it is important that, we understand that, government have got a particular role that it needs to, to play. I'm saying this, looking at your slide on page 10. Our approach to climate change mitigation, your bullet number two. Climate change policy should not constrain, but should rather play a supportive role. I thought that's exactly what the government is actually, been arguing, to say, yes, we'll reduce at a particular time, but as a developing, country, we should also be able to have a space for growth. What is your comment? Because it is already covered, by government, in that. On your page 13, Chair, I want to understand this, because there are a lot of unhappiness in your presentation when I read here. So you are saying that this white paper have got elements that were not there in the green paper, where you're saying these were not reflected in the green paper, not the draft. white paper, you know what you're talking about. You know there. And I think that will be linked to Mr. Morgan's question of the consultation between yourself and government, as that SASOL is one of the key major stakeholders. The other matter, you know, for me, on the very same page, on the, you know, there you are talking about two key elements that you know we need to base our ambition on, and that we are talking about the accurate national greenhouse gas inventory. My issue there is, do you suggest that this is not the case? Whatever was done was not based on those two you know elements that you are referring to, to there. And the last one for me, Chair, is on the conclusion, concluding remarks. Those two you know bullet points there for me. If you know, I would need some explanation on those two last bullet points. Our primary concern and your further you know you talk about further implementing as proposed. If you can make comment of what you mean, because for me, it is a worry if you say that that this now is on the stage of a white paper, and you feel that proper consultation was not done between government and yourself, and those become the concern of the major stakeholder. That's the concern for me. Thank you.
Any other questions? Ms. Manganya, Ms. Bengu, Dr. Huang. Just look at that. This is what the green paper, the white paper says. Can you see it? Business as usual is the orange with a huge trajectory. Anything from the top to the bottom is what could happen with business as usual. The blue line inside the green line is what we promised in the LTMS. After the LTMS, that was our required by science trajectory. The red one, we are told, is what Cabinet's position was in the 208 Lakhotla, the red one. The little one that between the years 2020 and 2025 is that's the Copenhagen. Copenhagen, yes, there's a purple up there. The Copenhagen undertaking. What we've now said as government, to make sure that all those different positions we've taken is included, this trajectory we've made is the green. So all three, the other ones, are now within the green. If we really do well, then we'll, in 2050, be at the bottom of the green. If we do just what we've said we would do, then at least by 2050 we'll reach Cabinet Lakhotla decision in 208. All those, as I say, you can see the Copenhagen one is flat bang in the middle of it all. Now, do you want to tell me that you do not want your country and your government, who has taken certain decisions, not to comply with that? I want to know it's part of your answer. Are you telling us now that you want us to change that? To go back to the world and say, all these things we said were hot air. The other thing I want to say to you, you know, there's debate about whether we should have a carbon budget. You know, for me, I just don't understand the debate. I don't even know why people raise it. Because what is the international negotiations all about? What is it all about? We say that we agree, and some people would disagree with it, that we're not going to let the climate get more than 2% of what it is now, or whatever date it was. To do that, you have a certain carbon budget for the world. A carbon budget for the world. If you want to reach 2%, you cannot produce more carbon than this, what the budget is. The negotiations is all about taking that cake that carbon budget and dividing it amongst countries. Even this position we have here, the purple one, the red one, the Copenhagen one, are targets we've had to set for ourselves and commitments we've made for ourselves. We don't even know that what we are suggesting, that we should have a single agreement for the world, and in that agreement each country must have its obligation. The way things are going so fast, the obligations we've made of only reaching 2% of that will mean that the part of that carbon budget we get is probably going to be smaller than we even think we're going to get, and may actually ask us to achieve targets below what we're saying now. In all likelihood, that's going to happen, because most of the other countries are not doing it at all. So we just have a runaway train at the moment. Now, of course, if you go to 1.5, that budget even shrinks more, and whatever part we get is even going to probably be less than that. That is what we have to think about when we're suggesting that we're not going to reach these targets and so on. It may very well be that if we start winning in the international negotiations to actually get a single agreement, and actually we get a target that the world gives us from that budget it's going to have. Now, what I don't understand about the debate that I hear from business is that that is exactly what we're doing in this country. What we're suggesting happens at the world stage, we're saying exactly the same. There has to be a carbon budget, whatever size we say it is, based on our projections, and that has to be divided up, and those targets must be met. How's it done? It is exactly, the principle is 100% the same. So to try and suggest, we don't know why there must be carbon budgets, or, I mean, you're just out of touch. You don't understand what is going on in international negotiations and what we're actually trying to negotiate. We're exactly trying to negotiate a world carbon budget. That's what we engage in. And that is what we're going to have to, once we actually achieve that, that's exactly what it will be here. The only difference is now, South Africa is moving quicker than that process, which means the chance that we can actually achieve what we have to achieve we have a better chance of doing so. Don't have an absolute certainty we'll achieve it, but have a better chance of it. That's what the issues are. And I want you to really respond to those things, because it seems to me, in what business is looking at, you're looking at in a little prism, which you're not seeing the picture. You're looking at social shares, and you're looking at Cecil profits, which is not what this is about. This is about a different country. So I want a response to all those, and what is wrong with that trajectory we're trying to make, which, as I say, has been increased since the 208 Lekgotla. It's actually at a higher trajectory than we originally have it. But the whole green is what the trajectory is now that the green paper, the white paper, is suggesting. Any other questions before they start answering? Okay, let's have answers. Thank you. Oh, sorry, there is another one. Here's a nice sentence here you didn't read. As a strategic step in responding to the need for development of low carbon energy, Sasol New Energy was established to broaden the company's business activities. Now tell me what you've done, how much you've invested, and how you've broadened Sasol. You see what I said earlier, that you must become the kings of renewable energy, has got any reflection in that sentence you've written? Okay, there are a lot of questions. Respond in whatever order you want.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll start with the questions from Mr. Morgan, in which he asked us to respond to what the risks are to the policy paper. Maybe get to the point, specific point in terms of information. We employ approximately 34,000 people, which the bigger majority is in South Africa. I think it's about 28,000 in South Africa. And we've been told that that means an indirect employment of about 200,000 people. The multiplier is so high because these are high-paying jobs and has a significant reach in the economy. That's not just in the energy, but also in the chemical sector. The consequences of the policy as it's implemented will lie in how, of course, the carbon budget is implemented. We believe that, and that goes to our engagement with various departments, which I'll come to later, but that our contribution to the economy is understood, and that we believe that that the prioritization of certain sectors needs to be taken into account. I would just like to at this point emphasize that we do support the country moving to a lower carbon trajectory. We understand that in the longer term, the carbon intensity of the economy needs to change. And if I can come back to the point the chairman has just raised in respect to what we've done or are doing, we started a new business called Sasol New Energy, in which we are focusing on low carbon, particularly electricity, but also renewables, in particular solar energy. So as it stands right now, we've got two proposals to be contemplated by the board in renewables energies, and once they've gone through the approval process, the specifics of that will become public. Just to emphasize the point that we are actively engaged in that area. As far as the carbon tax goes, and
how much the investment? Don't give me the details, but how much do you think this